Okay, folks, welcome to another episode of The Suspendables. Coming up on today's show, it's a beauty. Don Cherry, not a good week. Not a good week, Don. We're going to talk lots about that. Another thing about rivalries, everyone forgot about the Habs-Quebec-Nordiques rivalry. Russ was in that. Jeremy Roenick, would he be the replacement for Grapes? Russ knows him. He's going to talk about that. That and much, much more coming up in The Suspendables. Rolling, rolling, rolling. Keep this thing a rolling. Hi, everyone. Jungle Jim. Episode. There it is. There's the White Claw. Episode 23. I'm starting to lose track.
I think it's 24, isn't it?
Like I said, I'm starting to lose track. I don't know. We got a low 20s. We got a low to mid 20s episode. We're supposed to know those details. Once again, welcome to The Suspendables. That's me and my beautiful buddy, my long life friend, Russ Courtnell on the other end, fresh back from Maui. That was your weekend, Russ?
Week, yeah.
Week in Maui.
What was going on? Maui. We had the third annual Outrigger member guest at McKenna Golf and Beach Club, where I used to work for Discovery, Lanco, and a lot of friends from the years I spent there. And one of the guys, Jim Hill from Denver, actually, he used to live in Canada and moved to the States and has done very well in real estate. And he bought the last weekend I was in Maui before I left, when I was working there, I sold him a house. So the last 2 years he's had me as his guest. I don't know if he'll have me next year, but but we had a lot of fun, and it was fantastic. Tommy Armour the third won it three years in a row with Jim Falk.
Who's Jim Falk?
Jim Falk is a member, and Tommy Armour the third is his guest, of course. Yeah, can't lose, obviously. Right. And Jim Falk owns a lot of dealerships in Hawaii and then in Beverly Hills. So
what's a member guest like there? I know. So my member guest is it's about $400 to bring the guy in, and it's all day long, breakfast, lunch, dinner, and bars everywhere.
It's more than that.
What are you gonna tell? Come on, we want to know.
I don't know. I didn't pay, but it's probably a few thousand dollars. It's minimum $2,500, and it could be as high as $4,000. They had for the wine lovers out there, they were serving as the house wine for the Stag Night. Came a special select, which is pretty outstanding.
Okay,
and then when the wives came the next night, and girlfriends or guests at the Vista, which is just this outstanding location, beautiful views and a great place to have parties. They were serving Cristal champagne when you walked in, and then Dominus, and it was just, we had Kelly James the band, and it's just Discovery knows how to do it. They do it better than anybody else. I mean, I haven't been to every member guest in the world, but the ones I've been to that Discovery throws are much better than the ones I've been to that are non Discovery. They're pretty
strong.
Oh my gosh, it's so amazing. You know, food everywhere, booze everywhere, golf balls everywhere.
Uh huh.
It's good time.
So you're not. It's not like mine where you got a used putter. Your guest gets. That's what you get.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're back at tons going on. There's a huge story in the NHL, and I'm sure you've heard about it. And I spent the morning talking about it on another podcast for the entire one. It's lively, but Don Cherry, Grapes, got fired from the NHL for some comments he made. This is the week of Remembrance Day, which just happened, and we want to talk about that. But before we did, there's other things I wanted to ask you, because otherwise we'll never get to them in hockey. And we've got questions, Russ. People keep pouring on the questions.
Wow.
And I'm sure this one stems from the firing of Don Cherry. with someone asking, did you ever play, because Jeremy Roenick did a stint, sort of looked like it was sort of looking at him auditioning for something like Coach's Corner years ago. And someone asked, what's he like? Did you play with him, Russ? And what sort of guy is Jeremy Roenick? Because we see him sort of a crazy guy in the media.
Jeremy, I played against him for many years, most of my career. He came in after me. And he was a spirited guy on the ice, was not shy of, being vocal. And then into the media, he's one of those guys that, kind of like Holly, he'll tell you what he's thinking. He doesn't sugarcoat anything. So
right.
I think he prides himself on being that guy, very vocal and kind of controversial, but I actually got to know JR a little after my career. Mm-hmm. And when I first retired, I was with Jeff, my brother, and we met him at Gretzky's Fantasy Camp, and he wouldn't talk to us. And I went, fuck, what was that all about? And Jeff goes, you don't know, I broke his jaw in Chicago.
Oh, no.
So it took a couple of years for JR to warm up to us, but like most guys when they retire, you don't ever forget, but the pain kind of goes away when you can't do anything about it off right. The ice.
Yeah, I always sort of knew him as a blowhard, that he wasn't he was popular, but kind of lippy, but I met him. Then I met him in Phoenix, and he did this crazy stunt. I heard he's nuts. Like, I heard he's in a funny way that he'll just do anything for a laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And someone told me there was a story about a house in Phoenix on Whisper Rock, which is a famous, iconic golf course down there. Bunch of big gunners are members there, including PGA players, of course, who flock to Phoenix to play if they're either in Florida or Phoenix. And someone told me there was a house there that a guy bought on a hill, and it was infested with something like 300 rattlesnakes when the guy bought this house. And everyone was freaking out and being grossed out. And Roenick's sitting around listening to this story, and apparently goes out and finds one, and grabs it by the neck, and brings it into the clubhouse. No, he was fucking hammered, But anyway.
That wouldn't surprise me. I've seen a video of him with a rattlesnake that he caught in his garage, and he flipped it over the fence. So I've actually seen it on Instagram, or one of these videos that goes viral.
Yeah, crazy.
But that doesn't surprise me. He used to be a member of Whisper Rock. I don't think he's a member there anymore.
Yeah, I knew a buddy of his who got kicked out of Whisper Rock for taking a gouge out of the green. He was the realtor to the stars. I don't want to mention his name in case I got the story wrong.
Some guy.
Say that.
Just some guy.
Just make the shit up.
Yeah.
Remembrance Day, I come across that time of year when we all do, it's Veterans Day in the States. It's Remembrance Day in Canada. And there's the obvious how lucky we are, about all the guys who fought. But I always go through this thing, Russ, going, I just could never imagine having to go to war,
yeah,
to getting tapped on the shoulder. The life I was born in the 60s. Yeah, you were too, right around there. And, when I see these stories or movies, particularly a lot of it now, the awareness of veterans, there's only 3,000 veterans left. They're well into their 90s now. I don't know how to even think of what it must have been like at 16 or 17 years old when you got the tap on the shoulder and said, okay, fun time's over. You're going to war.
I totally agree. I think of all the NHL players that were playing during those years, and they quit. They had to quit. They go off to war. Like the Metz brothers from Wilcox, Saskatchewan, Don, mm-hmm, and Nick played for the Leafs. They left for war, came back, and then won another cup or two.
Yeah.
Conn Smythe, the owner of the Toronto Maple Leafs, he might have been the Stafford's son at the time, maybe. He was in World War I and II.
Jesus.
I mean, just, you know, people of, didn't really, I imagine it, in Canada, it didn't matter who you were. US, I assume the same thing. I mean, these guys got, okay, you're going off to war and fighting and killing other human beings. I mean, I just can't imagine the scars that must leave on these guys. I was listening to the radio today, and they're talking about all the veterans and how they're good and bad. They're really starting to talk about their suicidal and their suicidal thoughts. And so there's the lady on there, the psychiatrist who's talking, say the good thing is that they're feeling like they can talk about it now. So they're sharing their mental health stories versus, you know, 20 years ago, they were afraid to talk about it or embarrassed to talk about it. But there has to be an ongoing bad dream for these guys. I mean,
oh, the trauma.
Yeah, it's terrible. But they all, you know, men and women have fought for our freedom to be able to have shows like this and walk the streets and feel safe. And it's an amazing, amazing time. And I think a lot of people have forgotten about it. And so it's good that we have days like today where we're talking about it. It's every sporting event is having some sort of ceremony, and there's parades across the country, so at least they're recognizing these incredible people that are still alive, and for us that never fought, remembering.
Yeah, you know, people talk about relationships that they have with their grandparents, and you know, my grandparents are long gone. You know, my parents are dead now, and you know, my grandmother was born in 1900. I think her husband was right around the same time, and people love to hear these stories of the old days. But if you want to ever snap and be shocked into reality, in Canada we have legions, you know, legion halls, where it's a place for veterans to go and is drop in there on Remembrance Day and listen to some of these stories that these guys tell, and you'll be rocked, you know. But
and you get cheap beer too.
And you do. You get to play pool, listen to some stories, you get cheap beer.
I went with my stepdad and his buddies, and to the Legion in Victoria, and I'd never been before, and they're like, you know, they're buying rounds. I go, I'll get this round, and I don't know, it was like 8 beers, and I can't even remember, but it was so inexpensive. I'm like, why the fuck haven't I been coming to this place more often? But you're right, at this time of the year, if you're allowed to go in, you should.
Yeah. So that leads us to this massive story. If you don't know who Don Cherry is, you've been living in a cave. He was, you know, an NHLer and a famous coach with Boston, and then of course has had this 30-plus years with a friend of yours, Ron McLean.
Yeah.
They do intermission breaks, and they've been doing it for a long time. Super popular segment.
Mm-hmm.
And Grapes of All Guys, over the years, he spent a lot of time recognizing veterans.
Yeah.
And war heroes and fallen heroes and fallen soldiers. And then...
Current and past.
Current and past. That's right. Yeah, current and past. And I always like that segment about Grapes. And then this past weekend, he talked about Remembrance Day again. And of course, we wear a poppy here. You buy a poppy. The Salvation Army guys are out there all the time. And poppies are everywhere. And you make a donation and you put a poppy on. And that's how we do it here in Canada. And there's a history behind the poppies that you can look up. But... immigration has been in the news for a long time. You live in the States, so you're well aware of everyone's take on immigration, you know, particularly with POTUS giving us his opinion on it and the wall and all that stuff. Don Cherry yesterday makes a statement on Coach's Corner, is what the segment's called, and says, you people, referring to immigrants.
Yeah.
Saying you people have got to spend some money, spend a couple of bucks and buy a poppy. And this became so reactionary that people weighed in, mostly calling for Don Cherry's head. Ron McLean was caught in a terrible spot, who came out after and apologized about it. The Rogers Sportsnet made a statement saying, This is discriminatory. It is nowhere where we want to be. And we've talked to Don about it. That was yesterday or a couple, you know, and today they fired him.
Wow.
They fired him over it. And I don't know if you want to go first, Russ, but I have certainly a take on this. And like I said, I spent the better part of the morning talking about this, that I completely disagree with the hate that people have for Don Cherry on this thing. I think he could have maybe used other words, but I really am of the opinion that he's not a racist. I know Don, not real well, but racism to me has always been, you know, what's your intention? What's the intention of what you're saying here or what you're doing? And I think it's a massive overreaction. I think it's a massive overreaction. He was referring to immigrants when he said it, saying, here's how we do it here.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to the country. You know, it's the best place in the world, and you love it, and you're here for milk and honey, and but buy a poppy. And that has completely backfired, and to the point where he got fired. The outcry is mostly against Don Cherry, the takes on it. And anyway, we can talk about this. I'm against it. I think it was a big overreaction, and we want to know what you think.
I wonder how. So I'm a big fan of our country and everything it stands for. My dad, on Saturday night, we got to watch Hockey Night in Canada in front of our TV in our Rumpus Room in Victoria, British Columbia. And that was the only time we were not allowed to eat at the dinner table as a family. We could go down there with our hamburgers and french fries. It was a big deal. And when we got down there, my dad would make us all stand for the anthem. And so Canada, and I've represented Canada for every men's hockey team except for the one that plays in Davos. So love the country. And, you know, when I grew up, there was this thing about Quebec and, you know, the West doesn't like Quebec. And then I went and played and lived in Montreal for 4 years. And I just love the French. I love the people. I wish more and more Canadians would go and spend time in Quebec. And then after my career, I got to spend some time out on the East Coast, you know, Nova Scotia, Newfoundland. I went to school in Saskatchewan, and so I've spent some time across the country and met many, many people, a lot of different people, and I don't know what he could have said differently, but I wish there was something he would have said it differently, that hey, this is a great country, you moved here, you know, here's our values, and I hope you buy a poppy, or I hope you, you know, fall in love with this country that people died for our freedoms. I don't know. Is it, how do you say it that you're not fired?
Well, I think you say it this way. One of the issues is the big bad world of business that a television network, you know, TSN or Rogers or Sportsnet. They got to, you know, it's all open and closed business on how many viewers, the cost of you know, putting a program together, and sponsors. That's how it works, you know, corporate sponsorship and advertisers, which is in the millions, you know. And so I think when you do that publicly on television, you work for a company, it's a different deal. They're going to say, listen, I know you're entitled to what you want to say. Everywhere from freedom of speech to we want you to be opinionated. That's what makes Don Cherry great. But unfortunately, I think you can't do it. You can't really say what you want to say all the time, because some sponsor, multi-million dollar sponsor, can say, we don't agree with that. So either get rid of the guy or we're pulling our ads, you know.
So I knew we were going to talk about this today. So I was thinking about it a little bit. So what happens now? If all the viewers turn off the TV because they're pissed off that Don gets fired and nobody watches their program. So then what do they do? Do they bring Don back? Because if you're correct, which I think you are, they're worried about their sponsors and viewers. Mm-hmm. But what if the viewers don't agree with him getting fired and they all boycott it? Then what?
Then right.
Now it's no. Oh, sorry. You know what? We overreacted, and we're going to bring Don back, and he's going to apologize, and we're all good to go. Because if you're correct that they're gassing him because of that, well, I'm telling you, the hockey fan in Canada is pretty freaking strong and powerful. And if they go against this and don't believe that he should be, they're in for a whole hell of a turmoil with what they did. So I it'll be interesting to see the fallout after this.
Totally.
Because he was talking about guys who gave their lives for freedom, really. I mean, if the basis of the, you know, there's two things. He said you people and those people. And those people he talked about were young men who gave their lives for immigrants who are moving to Canada. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it's harsh. It's harsh. I just don't know I don't know what he could have said that it would have been okay. I wish I knew. Because this day and age, you say the wrong thing and the sponsors can't sell their products on the TV show, or this guy gets fired, and you know, mm-hmm. it's a crazy time we live in, but we'll see over the next 2 weeks what the Don Cherry fans, and he has a hell of a lot of fans.
Well, here's another take on this thing is no one really has been harmed by Don Cherry ever. You know, a lot of people make fun of him.
Swedish hockey players.
Well, some European guys.
Verbally abused for years.
Right. And so why wasn't he fired for that? You know, for singling out.
I mean, he was singling out. If anything was racist or whatever, you could go, well, every Swede that stepped on the ice, you would call him a Swede, chicken Swede, this. I mean,
right.
That was okay, but you people.
Right, but no one gives a shit about Don Cherry that much, right? They don't. But all of a sudden they do now, Russ. All of a sudden these people are coming forward and crucifying Don Cherry over this thing, when I'm going, well, wait a minute. First of all, it's grapes. So he's going to go a little offside, you know?
Who's, like, I haven't seen.
Listeners. Like people posting stuff.
Okay. You know, so, like, so the listeners are offended.
Yeah, the majority are, and there's been Facebook posts that I read from someone who just goes on, and I dismiss nothing about what guys did, and a lot of people have still, we're still young enough that we have relatives, or we're one person removed, or one generation removed from people who fought in the war, you know, and someone went on this diatribe about, you know, what they represented, their fathers, and this and that, sort of like against Don Cherry. You know, grapes never said, by the way, all you immigrants, you know, I don't want you living in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want you in this country. I don't. Yeah. I was interested to see what you'd say, because you kind of agree with me on this thing that I think it was over the top. Some people like it, some don't. Grapes has an opinion, which everyone wanted, and now you're killing him because he doesn't have your opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I'm married to a black girl, right? So I'm biracial relationship. My kids are mixed. The least racist person, I'm not racist at all. And I think that it's just, you know, this whole pride thing and people dying for freedoms. And then you say something and then all of a sudden you're called a racist because you're proud of and honoring these people but singling somebody out. And it's a tough time. It's a tough time.
It maybe would have changed his words, but the thought would be the same. So if he came on, Russ, and said, listen, Remembrance Day, you know, folks, you know what I feel about it, and marking this day, you know, I'm paying homage to these people who gave up their lives. If he said something like, if you're new to Canada.
Yeah, new. That's what I was going to say. Or you have just moved to this country. I don't know, just you people.
It's like gay rights.
There's another thing. I have a, you know, you, did you ever meet Don, who works for us?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. So Paris's mom hired Don. He's worked in our house since 19, or Paris's mom's house in 88. She hired him to look after her grandmother. And And then we inherited Dawn with Nana, and she lived with us till she died. And he's been with us. He's getting on there. He's the late 70s. He's a great guy, and he's a gay man. So I'm in a biracial relationship, and I have a gay man living in my house. And so I understand these things about people. You know, people have been racist towards my family. They've been prejudiced against my friend and employee because, but when people come into our home and they see that we're just a normal family with different people who look different, that if they ever, they would never come back if they were ever rude or racist. But the last 30 years of my life, I've lived in this environment and I've learned a lot about things,
the struggles
the struggles of what it's been like for them. And my son, I've seen it on the ice with kids calling him the N-word when he was a little kid. I mean,
wow,
it's horrible. I've lived it. I understand it. I'm not being, so what I'm trying to tell you is that I'm not insensitive. I think that immigration is a great thing. It's a need. We need it, and people need to come to these countries. So I just think that I don't know what Don, how he could have said it. Like you said, if you've just moved to this country, I hope you learn a lot about these people who gave their lives, and we wear these red poppies because of, and it would be really nice if you would support this. Because we have a freedom. You now have freedoms that you may have not had before. I mean, you almost have to, say it like that, I guess. I don't know.
He's not affecting people too much. I refuse to believe these pouring out on social media that this has really hurt me or hurt. It's not that big a deal. I get the immigration thing. I get racism. I get all that. Terrible. Yeah. You know, the point I was going to make, Russ, is obviously you're entrenched in it, from being in a biracial marriage and a gay man who works for you. So you know that more directly than we would. But if someone came up to you, Russ, and said, I'm against gay marriage, right? And you were saying, if there's a bunch of people there, and you were saying, listen, you shouldn't be, and you people have to get on board with gay rights. That's all Don Cherry was saying. You would single out, right? I'm saying I would single people out and say, you got to get on board. You heterosexual people have to get on board with gay rights. And I really look at that as a comparison to what Grape said, and that wouldn't be wrong.
You know, one of the things I do when I'm at an event where we, doesn't matter where I am, what in the United States, Canada, Europe, and they sing the national anthem, I always look around and make sure everybody has their hat off. And it's just one of those pride factors. It doesn't matter where I'm at. And I've seen some disturbing videos lately, especially down here in the U.S., of people sitting during the anthem. Not, and we've gone, we've talked about the kneeling thing, but
Kaepernick,
another day we can revisit that. But it's just this pride thing, pride of the country, and I don't know. Maybe we should.
I think of, speaking of that, Kaepernick, you made a great point, and I wonder if they could have done this with Don Cherry. Don has millions of viewers. The NFL has millions of viewers. Colin Kaepernick knelt during the the anthem because he was in protest. And you made a great point that they could have turned that into a super positive thing.
Yep.
You know, that the team could have turned around this, and I'm quoting you, and said, how can we make this better and make the awareness higher from what you did? And I wonder if they could have done the same thing with Don Cherry. You know, the problem is Don dug his heels in. The first comment I saw today after he got fired is Don said, I'm not fucking changing a word I said, is what I understood. So,
yeah, I mean, Don's, they've been talking about him retiring for years. And so this is a shitty way for him to go out.
Yeah.
He's had a great career. And so I don't know what's going to, we're going to, you know, what's happens happen, but it's going to be interesting to see now that they've fired him.
Well, we'll have to watch. Let's move along, Rusty. You played in the NHL when the rivalry was alive and well. We've talked about it before, that the rivalry sort of faded away now. There's a couple that they tried to get going, but they fizzled out. Doughty and Tkachuk, that was supposed to be a big one a few weeks ago, and everyone was going crazy. It's done. You know, nothing happened because of it. Oilers Flames, of course, but Habs Toronto, of course, was one of the biggest ones. But someone has a question for us saying, when you played in Montreal, was the Nordiques-Habs rivalry bigger than the Habs-Toronto one on any given year? I'd say there's more history with Toronto.
I would say, yeah, the Nordiques-Habs was. And then they went through a rebuilding period, you know, after the Stastny's kind of and Goulet were getting long in the tooth, and they brought in Sakic, and they went through this whole youth movement, kind of like Edmonton has been. And they weren't that good. So I played there for 4 years, and I can't remember losing to Quebec those 4 years, but we probably did. But it wasn't much, you know, the rivalry. It was, I'd say when I played from 88 to 92 in Montreal, the best one was Montreal and Boston. That was unbelievable. It was like a freaking playoff game every night that we played. And so that was a tough one. I think it's important when the teams are both equally matched. Mm-hmm. When one's weak and one's really strong, then it's kind of like, oh well, they're going to win. It's nice when you don't know who's going to beat who on any given night, and that's what I think makes the rivalry great.
Tell us the famous town line. You played hockey at Notre Dame with Wendell and Gary Lehman?
Yeah.
So someone wants to refresh, how did the whole Houndline thing happen? What's going
on? So Wendell and I played midget together at Notre Dame, and Gary Lehman went to the school, but he was a year older than me, 2 years older than Wendell, so we never played with Gary. Gary played for the Regina Pats when we were playing midget. Mm-hmm. So anyways, we all ended up in Toronto, and the president of our team was sitting behind the bench one game, and Martin Kenny was his name, and he was a gregarious guy, really. He was a salesman, he was great. His son is the premier in Alberta.
Wow.
Yeah. And he started going, put out the Houndline. Well, that was back when they didn't have glass behind the bench in Toronto and Montreal. And so the fans, I mean, you could smell the freaking cologne on men and perfume on women. It was unbelievable. Like, they're right there.
Right. And well, they got your sweat.
So yeah, and they can smell us, and maybe that's why they wore a lot of perfume and cologne, so they didn't have to smell us. But anyways, he started telling the coach, Dan Maloney? It must have been Dan Maloney. He started telling Dan, put the Houndline together, put the Houndline together. It had been in the media that if they, you know, Wendell, you know, playing left wing, was a defenseman. Mm-hmm. Gary Lehman had started out as a defenseman in the NHL and had moved up to right wing. And they were saying, you know, if you put these three together, they'll, you know, be the Houndline. And in Toronto, they've had these famous lines over the years. And so anyways, the media was playing with it, and then they put us together, and it was magic until Wendell got injured when he hurt his back. But we were it was exciting because you had Wendell scoring goals and fighting, Gary playing really well on the right side, me trying to get to Gary will tell you all I did was pass the puck to Wendell, but we had a lot of success. And we were really young, and it was just fun. I mean, every time we went on the ice, the freaking fans of Toronto would give Wendell. I thought they were giving the Houndline a standing ovation, but they were really probably giving Wendell a standing ovation.
Of course, you thought, you're like me. Yeah. That must be for me.
Well, I'm hoping. But it felt good. It didn't. I didn't care if it was just for him, but it really, it was awesome. And there were, so the guy was a guy, the scout, head scalper in Toronto. Everybody knew when you wanted tickets, this guy with curly dark hair. I don't know his name, but a lot of guys did. And he started selling these Houndline t-shirts. So there are these Houndline hats and Houndline t-shirts out there somewhere. So
cool.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, t-shirts, someone brought up a good point. You know, in the day and age of collectibles, sports cards, hockey cards, is there something, Russ, that you have collected over your life that is near and dear to you that you have now in your home? Or
I wasn't a collector. I didn't collect hockey cards when I was a kid, and so no, not really. Nothing. And then I got into collecting wine, actually, and then I got up to, when I played, I was collecting wine. I'd buy two cases of the same wine every year, and then I thought, okay, I'm going to sell one and keep one, and then just keep growing my cellar, right? So I got up to 2,000 bottles.
Wow.
And I ended up, when I moved from Victoria to LA, I sold it. I sold a friend of mine 1,200 bottles, and then moved because I phoned the customs officer and I said, hey, I want to move this American wine back to the U.S. And he goes, no one has ever asked us that question. I go, so if I come to the border, do I have to pay duty? Like, I brought it in, I paid duty. Do I have to pay duty on the way back? And he's like, sorry, I can't even answer that question right now. And so isn't that funny? So it just made it easier to sell it. So the only thing I ever really collected and was really into was collecting wine.
Is that a good business, collecting wine? Is that lucrative?
Well, except that, yeah, if you throw all the corkscrews out of the house and lock your wine cellar.
Yeah, I've been in your house. I don't think you're in the same house anymore, but I was in there and you had that big wine cellar.
Remember, do you remember the party we had at my house in 2004? You were there, you emceed the Cornell Classic we had for mental health. And on Sunday, yes, we had the big party, and my daughter, Allie, got up and sang.
Of course I remember that.
High enough. You had her come up like four times and sing it. But the funny part of that, there was a lot of different stories, but Cheech Marin from Cheech and Chong was there. And he said, oh my God, this is a beautiful home. And he goes, I'm really into, I like wine. I go, oh, come down to my cellar. So we go down to my cellar. I'm showing him my collection. I'm so proud of it. He goes, oh, this is unbelievable. I grab a few bottles, bring them upstairs. And I go out. There's probably, what do you think, about 80 people. I don't know how many people were at the
party. I was on stage with Kid Rock. Famous moment.
Man. And I come back into my dining room, and he is freaking hosting a wine tasting for all these people with my wine. I'm like, oh my God, what did I do?
Yeah.
There's like that. He had like 10 bottles open, and he's going, here, let's do a flight of Behringer Private Reserve from 1990 up to 98. I'm looking at him and he goes, Russ, this is unreal.
He, of course, because that's when your buddy, I've told the story before, that thing went to $1 million because you raised $700,000 or $800,000 that weekend. You have this radiothon, and then your neighbor, the Google or Yahoo guy,
topped it up to
But Cheech threw in an auction item. You know, the way those auctions can go is someone will, you know, they get emotional about it, and they say, look, I'd like to throw this in, you know, add this. Someone will come step up, you know. And he said, he auctioned off and got a lot of money. It was 10 or 15 people to smoke a joint in Cheech's hot tub. Do you remember that? It's true. That's true.
I remember I was on a tee box, and I didn't play in my tournament, so I would just drive around the cart and say thank you to all the participants rather than play with four guys and never see anybody. So I would stay on a tee box, and my brother would also, and we would just shake everybody's hand, thank them for coming as they passed through the par three, and then we went to another place where there was a awesome food station mm-hmm. that my buddy from the local put up, Jeremy Petzing in Victoria, and he was trying to outdo everybody else, which he did. He had a freaking country western theme with a bucking bronc. Mechanical bull.
Yeah, mechanical.
So he had that going, and the chef came over to the tee boxes. We're watching Cheech tee off, and he goes, "It would be my honor if you would come around the back of this tree over here and smoke a joint with me." And he goes, "Yeah, no problem. Hang on, boys. I just got to go smoke a joint over yeah. here. I'll be right back."
He was, well, like Kid Rock, you know, someone, oh. I played in this group with Kiefer Sutherland, and Gretz was there and him, and I played a few holes, and because there's too hammered to go on, but they got no filter, you know, and Kid Rock's a great guy. That was a hell of a deal. That was a great deal. And the only time I ever saw you sort of not yourself, and I mean this in a positive way, is how serious and passionate you were about mental health. You lost your father to mental health, and because I remember when you pulled me aside, you're a riot. You know, you and I have been laughing our bags off for 30 years, and you pointed, you know, gave the two fingers in your eyes, and then went back to me and went, "Listen, you do exactly what I fucking tell you to do this weekend." Because I got all these people. Anyway, great event. So a couple of things that happened this week in hockey. One of them is Connor McDavid notched his 400th point.
Wow.
He's the eighth guy ever to do it before he turns 23. Is this going to happen more and more, Russ? Is the game, we've talked about the game changing. Are we going to see more and more young guys performing to that level that they haven't in the last 20 or 30 years since you played?
I don't know.
He's a phenom.
He is, and who knows? Right. I mean, only the, you know, we just remember when Tiger Woods came along and everyone's like, "Nah, there'll be nobody like him." And then, you know, you get these players that come up and play. There's these players like the players like Gretzky and Jordan, and I mean, will we see other players like them? I guess in the NBA you can compare a couple players to them, but to Jordan, but nobody's done what Gretz has done or accomplished. And it'll be interesting if Ovechkin scores more goals than Wayne. I love Wayne like a brother, but I'm kind of excited for Ovechkin to do it. And I don't know if Wayne would be happy with that or not, because he did say he'd be the first person there to shake his hand and congratulate him. But these young players coming up, I just don't know. I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, Connor's a great player who's had two big injuries already. Crosby, you know, same thing. He's had a lot of injuries. These guys play so hard, so fast. I just don't know what the future holds, but somebody always comes up and surprises us.
It brings you to a point, speaking of that performance and individual performances. There was a guy who got traded to Dallas, and he got his seventh sack. I don't know how they have half sacks in football. I never understood that. But he got his seventh sack, and that meant he got an almost $1 million bonus because of that.
Mm-hmm.
He got to something like $890,000.
Right.
For this individual performance bonus. And I'm wondering, Russ, what you think about that. I have said in the past that I would love to, you know, if a guy's going to make $5 million, I would love to see a $1 million base. And the other four, if we win the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
You know, so what are your thoughts on that, Russ? And have you ever played at a time where that sort of interrupted what was going on because some guy was going to reach this huge milestone? Have you ever played for that? Have you ever been involved? And what do you think they should have those bonuses in contracts in a team sport?
When I first started playing, we all had individual bonuses. And I probably told this story on the show before where Serge Savard, when he welcomed me to the team, he said, "Look, you have all these personal bonuses. We don't do personal bonuses here." And he freaking ripped it up in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
handed me the team bonus plan and said, this one's better and you'll probably get these more than that. So I'm actually doing you a favor. Mm-hmm. Sign right here. Like, okay.
Sure.
And that was great. And I believe if you're paid a certain, you know, an amount to do your job, you should do your job and you shouldn't have the incentives. But if I don't know what this player makes or doesn't make, but if say he's not getting paid what he should be because of the where he is in his contract and maybe that was a way to give him some more money around something, mm-hmm. because of the salary cap, I don't know. They might have done that just so that I don't know how it all works, but I think if you're making 10 million bucks a year or 4 million or a million to do a job in pro sports, you should live up to that amount, whatever right. it is that you're supposed to be doing.
Right.
The team bonuses are, I believe, just better. Everybody's, you know, you just all in it together and pay the guy more money instead of going, oh, we hope you get 7 sacks. Pay him the money, and if he doesn't right. get the 7 sacks, then hold him accountable.
Yeah, I agree. There's something wrong if a guy says, listen, obviously you're being paid to win.
Yeah.
And the guy says, well, I'll tell you what, give me $100,000 for every round of the playoffs. I'll play a lot harder. Well, yeah. Fuck off. Get off the team, you know. So, Rusty, new feature. I've had a lot of requests to end the show. I'm going with the joke of the day.
Uh-oh.
Okay, the joke of the week. And you gamble, I gamble.
Yeah.
We all gamble. It's lovely. Like I said, the reason I gamble is I must hate myself. trying to catch a win, except for the Vikings. So here's the story. The guy's walking into the, and then we got to get out of here. The guy's walking into the casino, parked his car, you know, and he's walking in, and there's a guy walking out of the casino as he's walking in. And the guy walking out of the casino stops the guy going in and says, hey, listen, mister, would you do me a favor? I need to borrow a couple $100. My wife is really sick and she needs an operation, right? And the guy goes, would you shut up? Are you kidding me? What do you take me for? I would no sooner give you that money on that excuse and you would turn around and walk right back into that casino with a couple $100. And the guy stops and he pulls out a stack of cash and he says, no, no, I got tons of money to gamble with, but my wife's really sick. yeah, she needs
my brother's buddy in Newfoundland.
Yeah.
He went ice fishing.
Okay.
And he came back, and his wife said, did you catch any? He said, catch anything? He said, I got 100 pounds of ice.
Oh stop.
And then he phoned my brother back the next day, and he said, the wife almost drowned frying the ice.
Oh, no. I was going to give you shit for a lame joke that's so old. I never heard the tag to that. Oh, those people, Russ. Those people. Yeah. Oh, there we go. Anyway, take it easy, Rusty. Another great show. We'll have to wait and see. We'll have more to talk about Don Cherry next week.
Yeah, we're going to. This week we'll play out nicely for us.
Speaking of that, Russ, hot off the press, ready to order the Suspendables t-shirt. You're gonna email me at junglejerome@yahoo.com and we'll set you up with a t-shirt. But
yeah, and don't copy me on every email, by the way.
No, I won't. Don't worry about it. We've had 2 requests. It's a real collector's item, Rusty. Anyway, have a good week, everybody. Russ, great job again, and we'll talk to you next week. You've been listening to Russ Courtney on Jungle Jim on the Suspendables. Have a good week, everybody.